Okay, well, hello everybody, and welcome to this edition of the ASI cast. Today I'm very pleased to say I'm joined by Nick Manning. Now, those of you that don't know Nick, he was one of the founders of the UK media agency Manning Gottlieb, which is now part of Omnicom Media Group. He's subsequently moved on to various consulting roles, or consultancy roles, I should say, with large consultancy businesses, including MediaLink and Ubiquiti. And these days he consults for various organizations, including, and perhaps most relevantly to this conversation, the American Advertiser Association, the ANA. Nick also writes regularly and is published on MediaTel and in the in various trade press titles here in the UK and indeed overseas too. So hi there, Nick.
Good morning.
Good morning. So Nick, today we were very interested to hear your thoughts in print, or to read your thoughts in print, I should say, on the recent report produced over here by Enders Analysis, the management consultancy, media management consultancy, that was commissioned by the Advertiser Association here at ISBAR. And there's reference in that really of a great need for TV trading to reform and to change, given the various changes that have happened, obviously, over many decades now in television. What direction do you feel this needs to take, this sort of reform?
Well, the report that there is significant reform necessary in TV trading, there's no question about that. And the television trading mechanics in the UK really haven't changed very much since I was buying television airtime a long, long time ago. The same principles still apply, and many of the trading practices still apply. But in a market where television viewing has substantially changed, and not just changed in terms of the commercial aspect of it between the different commercial channels, but across all television viewing, which obviously now takes into account subscription television such as, you know, Netflix and Disney Plus, as well as video on demand, broadcast video on demand, and of course online video. Specifically in relation to YouTube. So the nature of TV viewing has changed dramatically. People now refer to it as AV, which I don't like. It's probably better if we talk about it as total television. And the way that consumers are consuming television is completely different to what it was, but the way that the commercial world works still really hasn't changed very much at all. So they're out of step with each other. And the television trading dynamics, therefore, should change. But what should change more than that is television planning. Because if you are going to pursue your audiences, across the various options that they have, you have to take into account the fact that viewing to commercial channels has declined because there are so many other options in the market now, not all of which are commercial. So if you don't look at the total picture for viewing, then you can miss quite a lot in the planning stage. And television trading should be formed by what you do in planning, not in terms of what's available to buy. So there's quite a lot of change needed, but the UK has changed hardly at all, probably less than most other markets, actually, in that regard.
I mean, television has always been sort of characterized as being a buyer's medium, hasn't it, really, historically? I mean, that's been, one might perhaps be a bit trite and say, well, you know, print or press is a sort of planner's medium. TV has always been a buyer's medium. And you make the point that it needs to change, and there needs to be a greater emphasis on planning as the medium and the way in which audiences use the medium evolves. What do you think are the sort of key planning issues that need to be taken into account? Because obviously what the planning issues obviously need to be reflected in the measurement. What do you think the key issues are that need to be
addressed? I mean, obviously, because viewing is now fragmented between the different options, so linear television, and it's, of course, that still has its strengths, and particularly in terms of live TV and strong dramas and things like that. Broadcast video on demand, all on demand, and online video. So we've seen this massive fragmentation of viewing across those different options, and the measurement techniques used to track that viewing, unfortunately, do not really exist yet. The advertising industry is trying to create measurement across the commercial options, but the reality is that Netflix does not publish any data on its viewing, nor does Disney Plus that I'm aware of. And so if advertisers want to understand what's happened to viewing in total, then they need to look at other techniques for doing that. And it's important to understand that because you need to know what the effectiveness of television advertising is, both in terms of reaching the audiences that you want and also in terms of delivering ROI. So really television planning should start from the top, which is what has happened to my audience. And by that, I'm not just talking about standard buying audiences. I'm talking about, you know, my audience. I'm talking about my segments, you know, my heavy buyers and light buyers. So clients need to track the viewing habits of the people they're trying to reach. And in certain aspects, particularly if you've got younger audiences, television is much less effective than it ever used to be, linear television in particular, because the younger audiences have migrated obviously to broadcast video on demand, but also into online video. And you need to understand, therefore, what your audience, I mean, it's basic stuff, isn't it? But you need to understand where your audience has gone before you decide how to buy it. And I know that sounds like the statement of the bleeding obvious, but actually that's not actually how the industry works in every instance, and it should.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, I guess there's also the issue of sort of non-advertising exposures, isn't there? I mean, there's, you know, if some of these non-commercial channels, for example, it might be possible to get various commercial messages at some point onto them, even if they're not actual sort of, you know, spot ads. It could be through sponsorships, or it could be through product placement, or it could be through, you know, whatever other kind of means. And of course, those facilities and those approaches are obviously also available on TV as it stands, or commercial TV, I mean, as it stands at the moment. So do you see a sort of future where we're also trying to measure non-advertising exposures, non-traditional advertising exposures, I mean?
Well, I guess so, but we've been talking about this now for several years. And the reality is things like sponsorships and product placements and other embedded video do not have there's not enough scale to really matter that much. It's very, sponsorship is a different matter, I think, actually, but trying to sort of beat the system by embedding commercial messages into content is A, difficult to do, B, difficult to measure, and there aren't that many options. And in fact, the audience doesn't like being bombarded with too much obvious product placement, as we know from research. So the reality is that all of those things are options, but they're marginal options compared to, you know, reaching millions of viewers in a single commercial spot. So advertisers really, and this is very much a planning issue, should be challenging their agencies to say, okay, we know that television advertising is becoming less effective at delivering our audiences for the reasons stated. Therefore, what are our options? Do we move more money into online video? Do we move more money into other forms of brand building, which could include, you know, out of home, or could include actually other forms of building brands through customer experience and so on. So I think the issue really is a media planning one. And of course, media planning requires quite a lot of data and measurement and research. And a lot of that does not currently exist. So the task for the research and data community is to help advertisers at an individual advertiser level with new techniques to understand what's happened to their audiences and what's happened to their investments and the return on investment. So there's a massive measurement challenge. And the issue, I think, really, and it's pointed out in the Enders report, is that it will take years, take years for the industry to resolve this, because you've got to get everybody to agree on everything. And nobody can afford to wait out that long. So if I'm advertiser A, I should be creating my own learning programs, you know, test and control programs, and challenging my agency on my behalf, not the industry's behalf, to work out, you know, what's the best way to allocate my monies and how do I measure my return on investment. So, you know, I think the task for the measurement community is a massive one. I think it's also a massive opportunity because individual advertisers need it.
And the issue, of course, is going to be, I mean, I think you know, the ASI community that we're talking to now, of course, is made up very largely of very senior sort of audience measurement practitioners. You've been at this sort of a long time. And I think if I was, I can probably hear them actually out the window right now saying, this is all great, Nick, but who the hell's going to pay for it? Because, of course, historically what's happened, you know, we all understand exactly historically what's happened is that the media owner or the media vendor has very largely paid for stuff. Now, if we're going to move into a situation where, you know, we're looking for a whole new planning framework for how things work from a sort of planning perspective, then can you expect, I mean, it's the question, can you expect the media vendors to pay for that? Or should it be somebody else, i.e. the advertiser is the obvious thing.
In the scenario that I'm depicting, it can only be the advertiser, because in the absence of an industry solution, which takes years and is very difficult to achieve, the individual advertisers have to step up and create their own version of this. And if they're doing that, there's no alternative. They have to pay, because the media agencies won't pay for it, shouldn't pay for it. Not in terms of on their own account. They might initially pay for it and then recoup the money, etc. But you know, advertisers can only do this by acting on their own behalves and paying for it themselves for their own testing and learning programs. So there's a big issue about how the industry change is paid for, but when it comes to individual advertiser solutions, they clearly have to pick up the tab. But that's just the cost of doing business. If you're an advertiser and you don't know what's happened to your audiences and you don't know the best way to allocate your monies, then you're not doing your job particularly well. And therefore, you've got to fund the data and research resources you need to be able to solve that issue.
It is a rather sort of curious thing, isn't it? Because if you think about it quite logically, I mean, after all, advertisers, of course, pay for their own market research. Of course they do. Yeah. Nobody is saying, well, there should be some sort of super body somewhere that pays for market research of some sort of sort. Obviously, advertiser A pays for market research into his category and his brand and how that behaves and how it's affected by circumstance and so on. And yet somehow, weirdly, within the sort of media scene, this has never really been, it's never really been done that way. I mean, I understand why not. I mean, it's been done, not been done that way, because advertisers feel that it's up to the vendors to sell them stuff, and part of selling me stuff is to prove that it works or prove there's an audience, and that means doing research, and that means you have to pay for it. But as things fragment, I mean, you know, in a way, that model fits very neatly with the model you started off describing 50 years ago, you know, the trading model.
Well, that was when media channels were unitary things. So I am a press owner. I want people to buy more press. I need to prove that it does what I say it does. So you invest as a media in press research. Well, the press owners, the print owners, if you like, now have their content distributed across multiple platforms, including, I mean, Facebook is a massive driver for mainstream publishers. They have all their online properties. So, you know, in a world like that, you don't have anybody responsible for each of those verticals in the same way. So it doesn't make any sense. I mean, the JIC model worked when you were, you know, advocating on behalf of one medium, but when you have a multimedia world, it doesn't work anywhere near to the same extent. And that's why the industry is struggling now. So that's not why, it's one of the reasons why, to fund it, is because nobody can agree on who should pay. But if you're investing on your own account as an advertiser, it is part of your market research budget. Or it should be seen as being like your market research budget, because all you're trying to do is use research and data to prove a point about your business, which is what market research has always been about. My issue really is that, and I've said this I guess already, is that there is an industry level initiatives that will take a long time and cost a lot of money. But in the meantime, advertisers shouldn't and don't have to wait for that to happen, because it takes a long time for that to take place. It's very expensive. Nobody can agree on funding. And, you know, in 3 years' time, they could be still questioning these things. Enders themselves say the solution to some of these big industry level issues will not come through till 2023. Well, that's 2 years is a long time in our industry. Yeah. And that even that might be optimistic.
I mean, how do you see things like the ISBAR initiative, you know, Project Origin, which obviously in itself is based around the WFA's sort of framework? I mean, obviously what they're trying to do is not solve advertiser A's particular problems. They're trying to set up a framework within which advertiser A can be guided to do whatever's right for advertiser A. I mean, that's kind of what they're trying to do. I mean, do you see that sort of framework approach where learning is sort of somehow collected, distilled, you know, systems are sort of improved and we all learn together? Do you see that as one way in the future, or do you think it's going to become entirely sort of fragmented down to it?
No, I think that there has to be an industry consensus on the best way to do these things, and the advertiser associations are absolutely right to try and find that the holy grail in that, but everyone should recognize just how hard that is. You know, if we take television as an example, we're trying to define standards where people are watching video content either on a 50-inch television screen in the comfort of their own living rooms or on a 4-inch mobile screen on a bus or a train. They might be watching a 30-second TV commercial all the way through on their 50-inch TV screen, but only seeing 6 seconds of an ad on a Facebook video on their mobile phone while on that said bus and train. And we're trying to provide standards that cover all of those bases. It's very difficult to do. Mm. And the variables of attention, screen size, dwell time are hard to reconcile into a common set of standards. Doesn't mean to say that people shouldn't try, because it's in everybody's long-term interests for them to try and resolve it, but it will take a long time. And there are lots and lots of commercial vested interests that have to be negotiated through in order to achieve that. Not least of all, because the big digital platforms are eating into the established broadcasters' audiences, and therefore, you know, you're asking, you know, rivals to come together and reconcile into that consensus. It's very hard to do. And, you know, the print industry in the UK has been wrestling with that same problem for decades. Trying to get commercial rivals to agree on things is very difficult just within one medium, let alone across media. So it is the right thing to do, but everybody should recognise that it's hard. It'll take quite a long time and be very expensive.
I think it's a great sort of secret that if you take Origin as a concept, and you know the work that's been going on at ISBAR, the organisation or the type of organisation that's been less enthusiastic about the whole sort of notion are the more traditional broadcasters. Mm. Now, the Enders analysis report must have been a bit of a. Well, I'm sure it didn't come as a shock because I'm sure they're perfectly well aware of what's going on. But I wonder whether or not you think that the broadcasters will change and will rethink the way in which they're going to be doing things in the future and will move away from some of these. I mean, we keep talking about trading practices, and that's right, but trading practices, of course, then lead to, if you're going to change that, you change something else, you move over towards planning, that changes research and so on, and that leads you down a certain path. I mean, we're talking about this quite sort of logically, but do you think the broadcasters see it like this, or do you think they're still sort of hankering back to the days when it used to be done a bit differently?
Well, I think they'd like to change because they recognise the disconnect, if you like, between what the consumer is doing and what the industry is doing. The way that viewing has dramatically changed, but trading mechanisms really haven't very much. I think they'd like to change. The trouble is they're not in command of that decision. The media agencies are a key part of this. And the way that the media agencies like to trade TV is the way that the broadcasters more or less have to, largely because the market is dominated by only a small number of buyers. You know, the big four, big six, however you want to define it, account for, you know, 70-80% of the market. So if the media agency world wants to trade the way that they do, then the broadcasters have got a problem because that's, you know, they're pretty much told how to do it. But actually, it's kind of in the interests of the broadcasters to use some of those mechanics anyway, because it gives them a guarantee of revenue, you know, going through the whole of the year, which gives them certainty over production budgets and profit and so on. So in a way, the current system works for both those parties, but it's just not in sync with what's actually happening to viewing. And eventually, though, when you get those two things out of sync, the effectiveness of advertising diminishes, both in terms of audience reach, but also in terms of ROI. So we're okay at the moment, just about, but we're reaching a tipping point where that won't be true. And you know, the tipping point, it's interesting, Ubiquity did a study about this a couple of years back called The Tipping Point. And they talked a bit about this kind of thing, but not so much in the context of trading. You know, at the moment, the trading system is rather like King Canute trying to keep back the waves, and it's only last for so long.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we can end by spending a few minutes talking about your own involvement, the project you're involved in at the moment with the ANA in the States. And this is a sort of fairly recently announced initiative, I believe, in the area of sort of programmatic. Am I right in saying this kind of builds on the PwC ISBAR sort of work here about where the money goes, in effect, trying to sort of clean up the programmatic space? Or is that what it's primarily about?
Well, I guess, yes, partially. If we look at all of the previous studies there have been, there was the first one was the WFA in 2014, the ANA did another one in 2017, and then there was the famous, you know, ISBAR one last year, published last year. They all concluded the same thing, really, which is that roughly half the money that leaves the advertiser ends up with the publisher. That's been true for many years and is still true. But it only tells a small part of the story. What it doesn't say is, even after that, what is the effect of ad fraud, poor viewability, poor targeting, and other, you know, ad exposure issues on that. So what does that 50% of the money become once you factor in all of those erosions? And in the worst scenario, it's not 50% of the money doing its job. It could be in single figures if you actually take an extreme example. So this study aims to look at the whole of the market in terms of, you know, what happens to the money in the system, and also the effect of advertising exposure on it. And all of the other studies also only looked at the open web, i.e. the DSP-led market. This study also opens out a review of how the walled gardens work in terms of their involvement in this. The issues in walled gardens are very different because you don't have the same supply chain, but you also have no visibility over the ad exposure metrics. They're self-reported by the walled gardens. So what we're trying to do with this study is to look at the whole market and reconstruct the way it works in a manner where there is much greater transparency, yes, of data and money, but also much greater advertising effectiveness at reaching audiences and therefore influencing brand growth. So it's a big study. It's the first of its kind. It has learned from ISBAR and the others, but it goes much further.
What's been the reaction of the walled garden owners, if we might call them that?
Well, we haven't heard anything really. I don't think we expected to. I think we've only just issued the RFP 2 weeks ago. The most important thing is, of course, what the recommendations from the independent consultants will be when we get to that point eventually, because those recommendations will advise advertisers how to gain greater transparency and visibility into the walled gardens to the extent that is possible and desirable. So I think they will respond when they see those recommendations, but that's some way off.
Okay, what's the sort of timeline on this? I appreciate you've only just issued the RFP, but what's the timeline? Well,
in terms of the recommendations, they won't happen until probably, I'm going to say, the first quarter of next year, but because we have to see, you know, the appointment of the independent consultants, the work then needs to be done, and therefore, you know, these things take time to get right. There's no urgency. It's better to take longer and get it right than to rush it. And we are talking about a big scope here, you know, and we therefore it will take, you know, the time it takes to get the job done but it's very important that the job does get done, because the level of visibility into the effectiveness of programmatic advertising is quite low. And this is a particularly good time to be doing this because of the demise of third-party cookies and the introduction of new identity solutions and all those great things. So I think we are at a, I think people, the jargon is inflection point in programmatic now. And also, as it becomes the de facto trading mechanism for connected TV, what we don't want to have happen is that all of the shortcomings of programmatic trading in online display get carried across to connected TV. And we are already seeing that in terms of significant ad fraud issues already in the connected TV environment, especially in the US. So, we're trying to sort of head some of those things off at the pass.
Okay, very good. Well, hopefully in about the first quarter of next year, you can come back and give us the answer.
I won't be the one giving the answer. The ANA will be the ones who will be publishing the proposed solutions from whoever the consultants are who come up with the answers. We're just, I and my partner in the US, Tom Triscari, are helping the ANA with strategic guidance and expert input into this, on working with the ANA to make sure it arrives at the right conclusions. But in the end, the answer will come from, via the ANA, will come from the independent consultant.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks very much indeed for joining us today, Nick.
Great pleasure.
Talking to you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Brian.